like to tell you you're magically delicious, but I don't know for sure. But people tell me.
I should be upset by that. I should be.
Do that in an Irish accent.
Oh, that's so funny.
Hi, everybody. It's Phil, and look who's back. Wendy Snyder decided to come back. She made a horrible mistake in quitting the show, and now she's back.
And then I'll be gone again next week.
I know. That's the way you are, though.
Well, you're back for a day.
Well, I was here a couple days
last week,
I guess, too.
Yeah. Again, we are not allowed to travel at the same time.
No, and that's for everybody's best interest. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill, and that's Wendy, and that's Dave Hoekstra. Wait a minute. Dave Hoekstra's here. How did that happen? Hi, Dave. That doesn't usually happen.
Yeah, how you doing?
How are you?
Okay.
Dave is the host of the Nocturnal Journal here on WGN Radio on Saturdays.
You do I love that
fantastic
show.
Job.
Thank
with
you.
That.
Thanks. Thanks.
It's unusual.
It is. It is. It's a little, like I said, a little DIY, but you know.
You know that's a huge compliment because there's so much stuff in radio is so cookie cutter, and then your show comes on and you find yourself just staring at the radio going, wait, what?
Yeah, right. You know? That's it. And we try to do like interesting things with music, you know.
In-depth interviews. You do a great job.
Well, thank you. Yeah, yeah. That's what I try to do is give the guests some space and stuff. So, yeah, thanks.
Is the show what you first envisioned or has it changed a little bit from what you first thought it would be?
No, that's a good question. I've gotten a lot of freedom. It is. It's kind of like a radio version of what I did at the Sun Times. It's kind of like a little feature show, you know, and we do, you know, we have authors, but we do a lot with music, you know, a little bit of travel segments and stuff. I'd like to, you know, when we do this Ireland trip, I, you know, do a couple interviews on my phone and stuff. So, it's kind of like, you know, travel, music, what I did at the Sun Times. Yeah.
And music and travel is combined in your upcoming trip that I'm very excited about. You're going to hang, well, you're not going to really hang with Van Morrison, but you're going to Ireland.
September 30th, 2018, right? It's, a trip to see him and just go all over Ireland and stuff. We're going to Dublin, Belfast, Derry, Donegal. It's going to be really, really a fun trip.
Can you throw some headphones on? Because Steve Bertrand of Steve Bertrand Travel wants to talk
with you. Yeah, I just saw him.
With you. Yeah, poor thing.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Dave.
Okay.
All right, so this happened before where you get to see Van Morrison in a pretty intimate setting, correct?
Right, Steve?
Yeah, he does a few shows a year in a hotel in Belfast, or just outside Belfast.
Is he crotchety now?
Well, Hoekstra knows the answer to that.
I just saw him in Nashville a few months ago. He played this new arena right outside, right on the river, right on the Cumberland River there, and he actually smiled a few times.
Really?
Yeah, he's no Jimmy Buffett. He doesn't he doesn't have the shtick going on and stuff, but he's very accessible, I think, right now, compared to other shows I've seen.
He does do just a few of these shows, and it's in a hotel-like ballroom where you go have dinner, tables of 10 in the round.
Wedding reception.
It's like a wedding reception. They clear your plates, and Van Morrison comes out and plays for a couple of hours.
I'm picturing it. I haven't been there, obviously, but I'm picturing it as I love Van Morrison. I've probably seen him 15 times, 20 times, and also my love of supper clubs. I'm just seeing the intimacy of like an old supper club.
Yeah.
Ireland.
Yeah, right.
That's a little bonus.
If you're going to see him anywhere, good for you, but on his home turf.
Yeah.
That's just fantastic.
Yeah, and it's like there's little sidebars. Like this is the 50th anniversary of Astro Weeks, you know, so he didn't do a lot of that in Nashville. People should know. I mean, he still does his old hits. You know, he did Gloria, does Brown Eyed Girl and stuff. So he does, you know, he does some covers. You know, he'll do some jazz standards and stuff. It's really quite a show.
I wonder if he's happy or sad that Brown Eyed Girl is probably one of the top five karaoke songs that everybody does.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty good royalties for him wherever.
Oh, yeah.
And the girl with the brown eyes is older now and has cataracts, but you don't need to think about that during the song.
Yeah.
Why would you think about that?
That's right.
So this must be a dream come true for you to
see. It's
going to
be a lot of fun, And I like to explore the literary stuff too, so all the writers that came from there, and I know there's going to be literary walking tours and stuff, and we're going to have our hands full. It's going to be a busy trip. I was saying the other night that, you know, I've actually started to research the trip, and you guys would like this. This is Dublin is the last place where there's a Tower Records.
They've got
the last Tower Records in the world. And I guess from what I read about it, it's just like it was here in the States. They've still got the DVDs and the books. And so when the guy who started Tower Records died in Sacramento, they talked about how this was the last. I want to go search that out.
That's excellent.
That's not on the itinerary, but I'll...
you're not there too long, Dave. Don't spend too much time looking for the records.
Dave, can you stick around a little bit? Here's why. Number one, I want to talk to you a little bit. We want to talk to you about the Supper Club love, because I have it too. and I don't understand where it comes from. Maybe you do. And then also, you were telling Wendy and me the strangest story I've ever heard about the house you just purchased.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It doesn't make sense. It's so crazy.
You still can't get your head around that, can you?
I can't figure out how this is possible. We'll explain more in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Well, gather around, y'all lads and lassies. Just something comes out of me. I don't know what it is.
People who have purchased the trip, Wendy, are now canceling the trip. Are you happy now?
The phone keeps ringing, but it's the wrong reason.
All right. Well, there are a few seats available, a few spots. This is through Steve Bertrand Travel, and you're heading off to the Emerald Isle to tour and to see a live, intimate concert from Van Morrison. What other details did I leave out, Dave?
The Titanic Museum in Belfast. I'm looking forward to that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that'll be uplifting. That'll be great. uplifting.
Yeah. I get you.
Yeah. And I, like I said, the Dublin Literary Walking Tour, that'll be fun.
It's, Tower, you know, Records, the last,
yeah, Tower,
the last Tower Records.
Yeah, breakfast each morning, except the day of the arrival.
With the Lucky Charms up leprechaun on the last day.
Yeah.
That's why you would go.
I would go to meet him.
Are you going, I think you're going to the Gravity Bar, too, aren't you? The Guinness stop?
Oh, yeah. That sounds like fun.
That's right. Yeah,
that's very cool.
Oh, that's very
they
nice.
They have gravity in Ireland?
It's weird.
Just installed it.
It's a rooftop bar where you can see all of Dublin around. It's really the best place to get a shot of Dublin. And it comes with a free pint.
Yeah.
That's worth the trip in itself. And Dave, you've never been to Ireland before.
I've been to Europe. I've never been to Ireland, so I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, we were talking the other day. I mean, I like the sense of these type of trips create a sense of community with people who go on, and you keep in touch over the years. You know, the next time maybe Van Morrison comes to Chicago, all the alumni from this trip go see Van Morrison.
Oh, that'd be great.
Right, Steve? And these other trips, there's always like a sense of community that gets
formed. Absolutely. Like, you know, I just took a group to Norway, and it was like 70% return. Dave Ennett's trip was 50% return. So people go, they have a fun time, and they keep in contact.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
If I didn't have kids, I'd go. I'd go to this one. They're not old enough to be left alone.
You say that a lot lately.
Yeah, I know. Well,
oh, if I only didn't have kids.
Can I say one thing about a deadline, though, just so we're clear on all of it? Today's the deadline for us to reserve, like to hold the group space with the airline. So we can still get you in if you reserve later in the week, but the guaranteed rate, all that stuff, it'd be best if I heard from people today.
So do it today.
It'll all work. It's just I've got this bureaucratic sort of deadline.
Sure, of course. All right, and give the website out one more time or the phone number so people know how to reach everybody.
You want Steve Bertrand at 847-606-6065. Email steve@stevebertrandtravel.com.
All right, start out with the story about your house, because you just told it to us, but I have chills. I can't believe this could possibly happen. What happened to
your house? I'm trying to make it a briefer story. But, okay, so I wanted always to get a mid-century ranch house. I just live by myself. And everybody, our friends, we have mutual friends, Steve, everybody said, well, you know, you got to come out to LaGrange Park, Westchester.
It's a great area.
Yeah. You know, I knew the Berwyn deal was bungalows, and I just wanted to get Atomic Ranch. I can't afford any of that stuff in Atomic Ranch magazine, but I really wanted to get a mid-century ranch out. So I spent about 6 months driving around. I lived in Ukrainian Village, and I went out to Westchester. I found a nice one in LaGrange Park I really liked, but there was a train running. It was like in that little downtown area, and there's a train running. So anyway, I find this one in Westchester. It's a nice little brick. It was in foreclosure. Put a bid on it. I got it. Really, really cheap. It was really, really nice. And it wasn't a real fixer-upper and stuff. And I was born in Berwyn, you know. And I was telling my brother, you know, the house is on a funny named street. And I just lost my parents a couple years ago. So I checked my mom's diary. It's the same house.
Your parents probably
brought me home in from the hospital. I was born at McNeil Memorial Hospital. And so it wasn't a memory thing because they were out of there after 3 or 4 years. They got transferred to New Jersey or something. So there was no memory of the house, but just by sheer coincidence, the house that I debuted.
That is so bizarre. Yeah. So when you were telling your brother and you gave him the address, he's the one who said, wait a minute, I think that might...
Well, he took it one step further that I probably was conceived there. I don't know if I could have been conceived in a drive-in, you know, I don't know. But it definitely was a house that they brought me home from McNeil Memorial Hospital.
Do you think they did any, changing of the floor tile
that's a great
painting,
question. You know, I'll tell you, we moved around. We moved to Columbus, Ohio, and then we pretty much settled in Naperville. And every place we ever lived, my dad always put a pencil sharpener in the basement.
And where it was connected to the wood or something. Because we had one, too, like one old school ones.
He always did that everywhere we moved. And so we're doing the inspection of this house that I got in Westchester, and sure enough, at the bottom of the basement was a pencil sharpener.
Oh, my God.
Don't you wish so badly you could share this with your mom and dad and tell them this? Because the odds of this are
it's off the chart.
It is really
unusual.
And the tree in the backyard.
And the tree, there's a 100-year-old. I've never owned a house before, so I'm doing all this stuff now. And so I had a tree trim around. We're looking at that tree, and it's a 100-year-old maple tree, and we're going to get it trimmed and stuff. And so I do think about that. I've never had a backyard. And I sit in the backyard and just wonder what that tree was like in the late 50s.
When they moved in. That's so sweet.
It's quite a story.
All right, we know what a huge fan you are of the Wisconsin supper clubs. I am too. Wendy is too to some extent, but I'm telling you.
I've never been. Oh, I got to tell you.
You would fall in love with them.
There was a Harvey's Prime Rib in Countryside that was the closest thing I can think of as for a supper club. Like if you get a relish tray, that's a supper club, right?
It's one of the prerequisites.
I started on that kick when I was at the Sun Times, and I go in as a gag, and I just have a little checklist of what is a supper club, you know? And I'd have on the relish tray, the brandy old fashioned. Why do they call it a club? What time is supper? You know? Supper's a farm thing, you know? It's like, you know, it's a rural thing to have supper. But it kind of goes into some of the stuff we're talking about, the Ireland trip and these books I write, this camper book and stuff. It's like, when I started on this stuff, it was all about sense of community. And now, in the times we're living in now, I think sense of community is even more important.
Mm-hmm.
But you go into a supper club and like everybody knows each other, everybody talks to each other. I'm talking about, you know, rural supper clubs in Wisconsin. There's some in Eastern Iowa and stuff. But the sense of community and the values is really, really, really strong.
Can I also throw this at you? It's a time machine.
Yeah.
As soon as you see the sign, as soon as you're driving up, you go back in time.
Yeah. And you know, on my checklist, I go, can you have a supper club in an urban area? I mean, there's been some that open in Chicago, but the best and the most authentic supper clubs are the ones with like a lake view.
Yes.
And, you know, trees.
Yeah.
You just sit there and mosey around. You get there, you make a night of it. You get there like at 4 or 5 o'clock, have a couple cocktails.
That's supper, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Then you eat, then you go back to the bar and have a couple more. You know, you're
and
there
no
for like
one's
5 or 6 hours. Yeah, right.
You can spend the night there, spend as much time as you want. Many times there's a love of having animal heads around the. You've seen
really?
This, right? Yeah,
yeah.
There's a deer, a bear, a squirrel. Yeah. You just see their heads.
Yeah. I've got a collection. We've had some of these people on my radio show, but there are people who collect supper club music, and that's the one thing I found that fell by the wayside is that back in the day, back in the 60s, there used to be like really great bands and lounge singers that would play at these places. Now that's gotten kind of, there's a place called The Butterfly up in Beloit. It's a day trip, and I think they still have music on weekends.
Do
and
they?
Stuff. But some of those cheesy acts that used to play in these Wisconsin supper clubs, it's great.
You can find
some of that music. Yeah.
Do you feel like John Hamm when you go there?
You do. Well, there's one in Kenosha called Hobnob, and every time I'm there, I'm waiting for a member of the Rat Pack to start performing. You just have that feeling like it's going to happen at any
Hobnob's
moment.
Hobnob's great. Hobnob's great. Might be the only one. I think I have this in the book. Might be the only one in Wisconsin that's right on Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
Got great neon in the front.
Oh.
Ishnala, I send people up
that's
there.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, that's right up there just north of the Dells. They're seasonal, but it's just beautiful, you know. So,
It's great. Go to Ireland with Dave Hoekstra. Why wouldn't you? Dave, again, give the website out or the phone number so people can do this. We want you to do this fast. Time is running out.
For more information on this Van Morrison trip to Ireland, call Steve Bertrand at 847-606-6065 or email Steve at steve@bertrandtravel.com.
And today is kind of a pseudo deadline if you want to be guaranteed a spot. So if you're on the fence, come on, this is Van Morrison. What is it, like 200 people? So it's a small venue?
Yeah, 300 people.
300.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, and you get a meal, you get Van Morrison, and you get to go to Tower Records with Dave Hoekstra.
it'll be better than that. Yeah.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Great
thanks
to see you.
You guys are great.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks,
you are,
Dave.
Too. We'll take a quick break, then some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Here's some good news. For a while, the bonus hour was on hiatus. You know, we switched buildings.
Hiatus.
And we didn't have a place where we could do the bonus hour because the other studio wasn't ready. Well, all that has changed. The engineers worked diligently, and all of a sudden there is another studio. So we did a test run on Friday, Wendy. You were not here. But Judy and I did a test run. In spirit, you were here.
You know, can I tell you what I've missed most about the bonus
What's
hour?
What's that?
Judy Pilak.
Sure.
I'm not kidding you.
Yep.
Because she does our 12:30 news.
Yep.
It's been hard going through life without Judy in my day.
Yes. We need a small dose of Judy.
Small. That is
right.
Key.
You don't want to overdose on Judy. You want all good things in moderation. And Judy Pilak is a good example of that.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But so how did it go? Did you pass the test run?
It was very chaotic for the first few moments of the bonus hour. You know the scenes, I even said this at the time, anytime there's a movie about space travel, they cut to a control room where people are running around, you know, adjusting knobs and levers.
Whoop,
yeah, you hear that a lot.
Going on.
Yeah, and then they cut to somebody official looking who just puts his forehead in his hand and he can't believe it. And eventually the bugs were ironed out.
How long did it take? And the listeners helped.
10 minutes.
Oh, so not
10
bad.
Or 15 minutes. Yeah. But the listeners were very kind. I said, if you're hearing this, please call. If you're not hearing that, please call. And people did, and we greatly appreciate that. So it should go off, I'm not going to say without a hitch, but less hitches, whatever those are. I'm not sure what they are. But
good evening.
That's a hitch. Yes.
I've missed you.
Oh, well, thank you. Mutually. And all that'll end tomorrow because I have to go away for a few days on business.
Do you have a briefcase?
No. They wouldn't sell me a briefcase. Forget about it. You know, while you were gone, somebody very important passed away. And the weird thing, and I didn't talk about it on the air last week because I wanted you to be here for this. And nobody's reporting on it. It's not in any newspapers. It's not on the websites. It's nowhere.
And it's not Tab Hunter.
No, Tab Hunter, we just found out this morning, had died. And you said something beautiful. This is a great tribute to Tab Hunter.
I am not the only one, first of all, to have thought this. I thought he was long gone. I really did. Bill, Tab Hunter, how old was he? 86?
He was in his 80s, yeah.
I mean,
the oldest man named Tab in the world. And now he's gone. One Calorie. That was his nickname. That's what I called him. One Calorie Hunter.
Actually, you're probably the oldest living creature because all the cats would be dead by 86.
Oh, that's true, too, Steve. Yeah. Yep.
He 86? Because let's be honest, Steve, did you think he was still alive?
Honestly, I don't think about Tab Hunter a lot.
Steve, come on.
But he was 86.
He was my heartthrob, not yours.
He was not your heartthrob.
No.
He would have been
very handsome.
He was
my great grandmother's.
Right.
But I really thought
he had died.
I haven't heard about Tab Hunter in forever.
Well, since he wrote his memoir and came out.
Yes. That was a big deal.
When was that?
2005.
Was it that long ago? Yeah.
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 He was gay?
Yeah. Tab Hunter was gay. Yeah.
And there
I didn't
that.
Know
the last
that.
Person to
please,
find out.
Please tell us that you didn't read his autobiography, please. That would be awful. That would be terrible.
I didn't know.
Yeah. He was connected to, figuratively, not literally. Oh, now whatever I say will just sound awful. He was, he dated Anthony Perkins.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was gay either.
You didn't know? Yeah. And other Hollywood celebrities. But yeah, I always
say, did he name names in the book?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I always say that being dead is not pleasant, but people perceiving that you're dead when you're not dead is worse. It's sad. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Can I tell you who passed away last week? And I'm telling you, I only know this because as preparation for the show, I like to dig deep into various websites, and they put a little notice of this, but I kept saying to myself, why isn't this getting more attention? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Alan Longmuir has died, Wendy. Alan Longmuir, gone.
Okay, that name sounds familiar to me.
I love the dead air. In honor of Alan Longmuir.
Yes, who is also no longer with us.
Who is that?
He was 70 years old.
That's
when he
not
died
old enough.
It's not. I can't say he changed music. Do you know who this is, Steve?
I looked it up.
Oh, you did?
You cheater, too.
He did not change music, but he was involved in it for a little while. Highly touted. Very highly touted. His brother was also connected to the same musical venture that he was. Does any of that help?
No.
Alan Longmuir was a founding member of the Bay City Rollers. He's the first of the Bay City Rollers to leave us.
Oh, now that's super sad.
That's very sad. Now, when you see a picture of him, Now, keep in mind, he's 70, because in my head, the Bay City Rollers are always going to be 24 years old.
Right.
They're never going to age. They're always going to be 24 years old. When you see a picture of him, he's extremely grandfatherly. And if this guy had walked up to you at an airport and said, "Hello, I'm a former member of the Bay City Rollers," you would say, "No, you're not. You're the grandfather of one of the Bay City Rollers. You can't possibly be one of them." But he was.
You know when he died?
When?
S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y. Wow. Night. That's not too soon.
It is, you guys are just defiling the dead today. You
it's got way too soon.
Tab Hunter's connections, and now...
Can we, Chaz, play a little bit of the song? Not that Wendy's version of it wasn't delicious, but play just a little
bit of...
It was delicious.
Thank you, Phyllis Diller.
You're welcome.
My
husband Fang told me to do that. Can you play a little bit of the Saturday song, Chaz, so people... Here it is. They had a show on, I think, NBC for a year.
After Don Kirshner's rock concert?
No, Don Kirshner's rock concert was on very late at night. This was on primetime. And this is the kiss of death for any musical group. Anytime anybody in the music industry says, "Well, those guys, they're the next Beatles,"
ooh,
it's over.
Right. Here's my dividing line. This is one of those albums that I had.
Yes.
And then when you go to college to meet new people and try to be cool, you never admit to it.
Right.
So you left it at home, is what you're saying?
No, dude, it's all the Stones and Doors with me.
Yeah. No Bay City Rollers? No. Who? I don't know who that is.
Didn't that song go number one? I mean, that was a really big hit.
It's not, I don't know if it was number one, but it was a huge, huge hit. And I think that's the reason they put their show on Saturday nights, was so that they could do that song every week.
Were they like a la Hudson Brothers, where they were goofy and did a variety things as well?
Yes.
I vaguely remember this.
They wore very big, loud clothes, very very colorful clothes.
Spiked up hair,
heels. But the clothing was what jumped, because you just saw like every color. They just had the whole, you know?
Kind of like pre-Wiggles. It was very...
Yeah.
You know, primary colors. Yeah. I can't believe that's him. Boy, he does look like a rocking grandpa.
But you would never...
He doesn't even look rocking, quite honestly.
If you saw that guy, the Alan Longmuir that we just lost at the age of 70, you would never in a million years go, "You were probably a Bay City Roller at some point," right? It doesn't make sense. But because I think, here's why. Because the Bay City Rollers will always live in the 70s. They didn't move on to the 80s and 90s, so you just kind of lock them in your head. They don't advance, you know?
He was the bass player.
Yeah.
And were they from Ireland? Because didn't they sound like they had an Irish accent?
Australia.
No, Scotland.
Oh, Scotland, right. Sorry.
Right?
Yeah.
I never questioned
you.
I think it was Scotland.
No, I think Scotland.
Yeah.
That's right.
Don't we all have computers in front of us?
Mm-mm. They took mine away.
They're from Edinburgh, United Kingdom.
Edinburgh, Scotland.
Edinburgh, United Kingdom. That's
right.
What it says.
Edinburgh, Scotland.
Is that the same? Is that one and the same?
Yeah. Yes.
It's like Italy being Italia.
Yes.
Or Germany being Deutschland. Or Elk Grove Village being England. I might have gone one example too far.
All right, yeah, they're from Scotland, because I heard a little accent. Good job.
Yeah,
you were the one who had the record, Mr. Cool Pants.
I didn't get rid of it. I still
have
it.
Do you still have it, Steve?
Sure. Absolutely. I might play it
tonight.
You're
very fortunate.
Remember their platform shoes?
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
They larger than life.
Yeah.
You know? And I seem to remember several of them having cleft chins for some reason, like Kirk Douglas-y.
The things you remember about people.
Well, back then, if you had a band, you always had one guy with a cleft chin, but the Bay City Rollers, I think that's why they were called the next Beatles, because they weren't afraid to have like three guys with cleft chins. Kirk Douglas, huge fan. Loved them.
Now, I don't really recall their show on television. I do remember Shauna Na's show. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Bowser.
Yeah.
I totally remember that. And they were on Midnight Special.
Yeah. The Shauna Na's?
Yeah. No. I'm getting back. I'm going back and forth.
Rollers.
They were on a Midnight Special episode. I don't really remember their show. Didn't you start going out on Saturday nights by then?
Yeah, but I would stay in to see them.
I don't remember that show at all. That seems like one I would remember.
It was not good. You know the type of variety show in the 70s where it was more cute than good? Like it wasn't
like
funny?
Like Sonny and Cher?
Yeah.
I loved that show. I loved the Sonny and Cher show.
Sonny and Cher were a slight step above, not a huge step above, because they did have musical talent. They did.
Yeah.
Sonny and Cher did.
And Chastity, who came out at the end all the time
to hug them. Yeah. Aww. But then, like, Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. had a show that was similar.
Howard Cosell had one
called Saturday Night Live.
Really?
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Mel Tillis and Susan Anton had one like that.
That's a weird grouping. Was she a singer? I know she was an actress.
A singer and, yeah, I guess you could say actress.
She looked good on TV.
She was very attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then every week, Mel Tillis would do the same thing where he would start to tell a story and he had the stammer. So that was you couldn't do that now. That couldn't be somebody's hook right now that they stuttered. But back then, it was like, oh, that'll be fun.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
This is the way we change back and forth.
The Hudson Brothers, I remember that show.
The Hudson Brothers, yeah.
Didn't Ken Berry have something?
Oh, did Ken Berry have a variety show?
He certainly should have.
He should. If he didn't, we need to go back in time and make that happen.
Do some tap dancing?
Yep.
Yes, I swear, unless maybe he was just a guest on somebody's
maybe he was
show.
A frequent guest. Well, yeah. Another frequent guest was the guy, and I'm sorry, I can't think of his name now. I think it was Sullivan, but he was blind.
Oh, well, what did he do?
He was a singer.
Oh, Tom Sullivan.
It was Tom Sullivan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All
yeah.
I knew from him was that he was on all those shows.
Right.
Did he ever hit or anything? I don't know.
I don't know that. I know they made a movie about him.
I never heard of him.
Mark Singer played him.
Listen, this is something he said on one of those variety shows that I have never forgotten. Or maybe it was Merv Griffin or something, but they asked him, you know, about being blind.
Yeah.
He said, you know, a lot of people think you just see darkness or you don't. He said, that's not it. It's just something that doesn't exist.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I never had thought of it that way, and I still remember that to this day.
Yeah. He was a pretty good singer, like a folk singer.
I guess.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
He was an author, athlete, actor, and producer.
I don't know. Tom Sullivan was a guest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I know. You can look him up on YouTube.
He'd show up like on The Tonight Show or Merv Griffin. He was all over the place. Steve, the one that always baffled me was Foster Brooks, because his whole act was that he was drunk, and then he kind of reversed course. At some point, he realized that he's made a lot of money off pretending he was drunk, so he would go and speak at schools, and he would do corporate dinners and stuff.
About not drinking?
Saying you should not drink.
I kind of remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
What surprised me is watching Dean Martin. I loved the Dean Martin show so much.
Yeah, sure.
And he always had a martini and a smoke and a pinky ring. But now, did I hear he didn't really drink?
He wasn't a drinker.
Why, though?
Because...
Did it make him more suave? I guess maybe it did.
Yeah. He wanted to give off the impression of being a playboy and
stuff.
A playa, right? So, yeah.
He didn't drink? Because he
seemed... Not really, no.
He faked drunk so well.
Yeah. Yeah.
That blows my mind. We have some listeners who want to talk about things. Can we take a quick break?
Sure. Yeah, right. Stay on the lines. We'll get to you in just a second. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to join in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You're the rose, and you are mine.
This is Tom Sullivan.
This is Tom Sullivan, a frequent guest on talk shows in the 70s. The movie about him was called If You Could See What I Hear... And it did star Mark Singer, who you know, Wendy, as the Beastmaster.
Yes. He has a beautiful voice. I looked at him. I've never seen or heard this guy ever.
You never saw Tom Sullivan?
This is Helen Reddy singing with him, by the way. And Sherry Belafonte, also in the movie.
Yeah.
Quite beautiful.
Yeah.
He must have done something that got him on that circuit. Because I never heard his songs on the radio. He wasn't a pop singer.
That's the weird thing, Steve. I don't remember him ever being played on any radio station ever, but on those shows, on the talk shows of the 70s, he was a fixture.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Even looking at him, man, I have no idea.
You don't remember him.
And when you look him up, it says Tom Sullivan, blind entertainer, author, athlete, actor, producer, and a motivational speaker.
Right. I know he went into that line of work.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. We were talking about crazy variety shows that we remember because we were younger and didn't go out and there wasn't much else to look at on TV.
Yep.
And Glenn remembers one. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, guys. I remember the wonderful Barbara Mandrell show with the Barbara Mandrell sisters.
You remember the two sisters? Can you name the two sisters?
Yeah, I do remember that the blonde played the Goldie Hawn kind of silly, goofy, you know, I'm not the smart one, and the tall, dark-haired one.
Yep.
Kate Jackson-esque looking one played the smart one, and I can't believe I have to talk to the dumb one, you know, routine. That was their
that
whole
week,
bit.
Right, Wendy?
Louise was
the
Mandrell.
Middle sister. Yeah. She was the tall, dark one, and Earlene was the younger one who...
She didn't look like an Earlene.
No.
No, she didn't. She looked pretty. Like a Playboy model, yep. And played it up that well.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And then thinking of that lovely show brought back the memories of the competition of bell-bottom pants and Donnie and Marie bell-bottom pants. You know, let's see how big they can go before they knock over the cameraman.
Right. Remember the running joke on Donnie and Marie every week was whether or not Donnie remembered to put on purple socks, and the crowd would go nuts. They would laugh like it was the funniest thing in the world.
I guess
well,
I never
they had
paid
to.
Attention.
They were getting $5. They were getting $5 to sit in the audience because that would be the only way you'd get me to sit through a Donnie and Marie show unless there was super glue in the seat.
Wow. Well, thanks so much, Glenn. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn.
No problem, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Tom Sullivan was brought up by Steve Bertrand. And he didn't really remember his first name.
He was one of those guests that you just, if you watched the shows of those of that era, you were going to run into him. He was just always on, like, you know how, like, John Davidson, like, was there a month in the 70s that John Davidson didn't just show up somewhere? He was everywhere.
Yeah, but you knew John Davidson was an actor once in
right.
a while.
If you ever saw The Girl with Something Extra, you knew.
Oh, my God. With Sally Field, I bought the paperback book. Because I did. I loved
the novel?
That show. Yes. Hey, I read a book. I wouldn't complain about that.
That was F. Scott Fitzgerald, was it not?
I was hooked on that show. He was adorable.
Yeah.
Mary, you know about Tom Sullivan? Because I swear I don't remember him.
Yeah, he was on... Johnny Carson would have him a lot.
Really?
On his show.
All the time. Yeah.
Where did they find him?
Yeah, blonde hair. He was blind. I think he played golf, too. I think he played golf.
Every time he'd come out with Johnny, he would tell a story of something he had done.
Yeah.
And in that movie, if you could see what I hear, the big scene is when he decides he's going to learn to drive a car, so his friends let him drive, which is slightly dangerous.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for strolling down memory lane with us, Mary. We appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great
You too. There's a little bit of a delay here going.
So again, Wendy, your eulogy at Tab Hunter's service later on in the week will be you. You will say, we've lost a very important member of our community, Tab Hunter.
I thought
and
he
to
bit
be honest
it
with
years
you,
ago.
Yeah, say that. Please say that.
But I'm glad he stayed alive long enough to tell me he was gay.
Right. Say that. People will love it.
They're not asking me.
You'll make Huffington Post. You'll be in Huffington Post.
Good.
It'll be fun. All right, we'll take a quick break. And then wouldn't it be nice if noted pet expert Steve Dale surprised us?
Maybe we could work that
we'll
out.
We'll see what happens. It's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Cool cats. I don't know if there's a cool cat today. It's going to be a high of 80-something.
91.
Oh.
91.
Yeah.
91.
It's been 12 seconds, but I know you've got other things you're doing.
Wendy, look who's in the studio to make your day just a little bit brighter. It's noted pet expert Steve Dale. Hi, Steve.
Sitting in a high chair.
Yeah, look at you. Do you want some cream corn?
Yes.
Do you? All right.
I'm in a little... I guess I didn't think about that, but I kind of feel like that now. Like I'm in a little high chair. You can see if you go to WGNradio.com and my bib and everything.
Yeah. Bill likes to call it a lifeguard chair. You, of course, called it the high chair.
Yeah, that's fine. What brings you to town, noted pet expert Steve Dale? How come you're here? What's up?
I live here.
Oh,
that's why I'm in town.
Oh.
Yes.
All right. But you're here to talk
there's
about
much
a couple,
to
of,
talk about.
A couple
oh,
of things from the world of animals.
So much to talk about. First off, the most important topic.
Yes.
I never know what to lead with. But
yes.
I can't not lead with the Meow Meetup.
Oh, yeah, coming up.
Yeah, the cat convention that
We're
I'll
all
be giving
very
a
excited.
Keynote on a Saturday.
Yeah.
With you.
Yes, you and I are going to do that jointly.
Will you be dead? Are they going to roll you, your lifeless body
in? This is so exciting.
This will be great.
No, this is really exciting. That.
What are the big topics this year?
Well, there'll be a cat movie videos, of course, because you can't have a cat convention without the cat videos. There will be cat yoga. There'll be cats available for adoption. There will be kitty bingo.
Will there be kitty bingo this year?
You use them instead of markers.
Yes, I'm not quite sure how that works. In addition, veterinarians from all over will be actually... So a lot of these cat meetup type things, people come in and don't bring your cat. It's, you know...
Oh, cats are not allowed.
Well, there will be cats available to adopt, but no, do not bring your
cat. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought people brought their cats to this.
No, they do not. The cats would not
appreciate
it. That's what did it.
I'm canceling.
Otherwise, you would have been there for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
There are also
who goes to this? And I'm not being rude. I'm asking, like, someone who's thinking about maybe a cat lover who's thinking about adopting a cat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Potentially.
All right.
But in addition to that, just people who love cats who want more information. So what's really interesting to me, this is, I've not talked about this yet, really.
Mm-hmm.
This is so exciting as I kind of figure this out. And this is a part of what I'll talk about in my keynote and with other talks that I give all over the country. So the tide is turning for cats. My talk is cats are like the Rodney Dangerfield of pets.
They get no respect.
You know what is really depressing about that, though? So I say that, and I look out into the crowd. 3/4 of the people have no idea what I'm talking about because they don't know who Rodney Dangerfield is.
Oh, no.
Really?
That's very sad.
It is sad.
It's sad.
And it's true.
You should bring a clip. Show a short clip.
Is there any movie he was in where he was with a cat?
He talks
Caddyshack.
that was the original title.
Yeah. So they don't know who Rodney Dangerfield is. So you say that. So then the room gets really quiet.
That is true.
Yeah.
The line always for 2/3 of the room just goes kerplunk. It sinks. But this is why. Well, you know, it made me think. And why is that? Well, it turns out. The millennials, who have no idea who he is, actually are the number one, statistically now, in groups of people by age, demographically, the number one most common cat owners are millennials.
I bet I know why. A lot of them don't have houses, and it's easier to hide a cat, and cats are allowed more in buildings.
In apartments. And
and they like to go out, and a cat is more self-sufficient.
Yep.
You don't have to let a cat out like you would a dog.
All probably
That's
absolutely
why.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I don't know why else. I mean, I'm not sure. I want to dig into this a bit. But this group of people really wants the best for their cats. So right now, historically, looking backwards... Cats are under-medicalized. Cats go to the veterinarian less than half as often as your average dog, as one example. People aren't willing, in general, to spend as much money on their pet as they are on a dog. Yeah, it is sad, but it's changing.
All right,
thank goodness for the millennials.
Thank God for Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, yes. He's changing the cat world, Wendy.
I think his line was something like, what did he say? I get no respect. My wife wants to put me in the litter box or something to
that
effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it may not have been his best line, but that's...
But a line.
It was a line, yeah.
All right.
But I used that as well, and it got a bigger laugh here than it typically does.
Good. That's good
Well,
news.
You must go over well at these.
Do you perform at nap time during this convention?
Hey, I'm
well,
also...
you're the one who says it's not going well.
Well, I'm also
the room
talking
is
about...
silent. I hear crickets.
No, I'm also talking cats like crickets.
Yeah.
I'm also talking about some other things that are really exciting. How to encourage cats to scratch in all the right places.
All right, you got to send me a tape of that. I need to hear
not
that.
Not on their bodies in the house, right?
And, yeah. In the house, and I'm also reading. Wait till you hear this one.
I can't wait.
I know.
Come
I'm
on.
Reading. You ready?
Yeah.
I'm reading love letters to cats.
Oh, yeah.
People write love letters to their cats, and I'll be doing dramatic readings of those love letters.
Listen, I love animals more
Come on,
than
Bill,
anyone.
Come with
but
me.
That are these kids writing letters to their
I
cats?
I don't really know, to be honest with you. I don't know. They just
Wendy,
asked
these
me
windows
to do it.
Don't open, do they?
No, we're not on the first floor anymore. It's a long drop.
And Instagram and Facebook cat stars like Lil Bub and
Lil Bub's going to be there.
Colin Marmalade.
And colon marmalade.
Yeah, both of them.
And Cole and
marmalade.
Oh, I thought it was like a...
And Sinbad, who's from Chicago. Actually.
Sinbad the Entertainer? No, that's
no,
Cedric.
A cat different, named
different,
Sinbad.
Different Sinbad, yes.
All right.
All of this, how can you miss it?
And how do we find out where and when and all the deets on it?
It is July 21st and 22nd, and finally...
And how much do they pay people to attend this, Steve, just out of curiosity?
No, that's not how it works. People are going to be lined up
oh,
for
they
this.
Are.
And in fact, if you type in my name...
Yes.
This is the first time this has ever happened in my career. If you type in my name, Steve Dale...
Your computer will go, are you serious?
No, people get a discount of $5.
Oh, that's great. All right.
That is great.
That's
say that with
fun.
More enthusiasm.
That's great.
Better.
That
yes.
is great. All
yeah,
right.
So you just go to their website, which I don't know what it is. It's Meow Meetups.
Oh, my God. You are not selling this.
Good sell, Steve. Wow.
But you go there. You go to the website and type in my name. You get $5 off. And truly, I am excited about this coming to town July 21st
sure.
and 22nd. At the Rosemont Convention Center, co-sponsored nonetheless by the American Veterinary Medical Association.
Fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's official.
All right. More with noted pet expert Steve Dale in just a moment. Noted pet expert Steve Dale is here, ladies and gentlemen, with...
What?
What's so funny?
What did I do?
You know what you did. I have a very difficult time keeping things off the air when they happen in the
oh,
studio.
Oh, sure. You can talk about it.
Steve asked us if we've ever gotten texts or emails about people who maybe are recovering from a hospital stay. I know I listened when I was recovering from my knee surgery
sure.
to you.
It
and
helps
the various,
you feel better.
Well, it's just something to do because you're stuck at home.
Well, that and laughter is the best medicine. I mean, Bill knows this. I have a
unless
friend.
You've had hernia surgery.
Penicillin is actually the best medicine, Steve. Laughter
no,
number two.
I think you guys are.
Oh,
you know, I mean,
you.
Honest to goodness. So I knew a very famous, I've talked to you about this,
yeah.
very, 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 very famous comedian.
Yeah.
And she would tell me, and she read a few to me,
mm-hmm.
of letters that she really received from people in the hospital or people suffering chronic illness. And they wrote her thank you notes.
Right.
And for some reason, I thought, the reason is because I can't imagine that it does not happen to you, where people are in the hospital or
recovering
from something and listening to you, or they have a problem in their life,
right,
and listening
right.
to you helps make it better. I'm serious.
So you asked us
help.
That, and you told us about that, and then you said,
oh my
I can't
God.
Believe
oh
this.
Oh, my God.
I just
OMG.
Received a text. It's almost identical to what I just told you. And then you showed it to Wendy and I, and it turned out you just had your dictation machine turned on. So it just kind of copied everything you told us.
It's a new phone. It dictated. And what's more, this text was actually sent to someone, if you follow all this.
Lucky them.
Sent to a public official in Chicago who's
oh,
probably wondering, what?
Yep.
Steve Dale.
Am I in the hospital?
Well, a public official, I have seen all over the news that the woman in charge of the Chicago Animal Care and Control, Susan Russell, was let go. I've seen it everywhere.
Yeah.
What gives with that?
You know, I don't know. I don't understand. Because here's at the end of the day what matters to me. The live release rate, the number of animals that made it out alive of Animal Care and Control, when she began about 2 years ago, just over, was about 70% for dogs, just under for cats. Now it's over 90% of animals.
That's amazing.
So we're kind of a no-kill city. So one alderman keeps saying, we ought to be a no-kill city, just like that. And we kind of are, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it's because of the work Susan Russell and so many others, not only her, but she's the leader in all this, have done to change Chicago so very much. And in fact, Susan will be on with John Williams and I just after 2 o'clock. It's her first radio or TV or any live appearance.
It's been all over the news. She's the executive director.
But here's what happens if you're a Chicagoan and the mayor fires you. He does it on a late Friday afternoon. Before the July 4th weekend, which is a terrible weekend for animal control because dogs get loose. People sadly
yeah.
tie them up and they get loose. So
and they're afraid of fireworks.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in the middle of kitten season. And she's pretty much on her way to the airport to go
you know,
to London.
The
go
middle
on
of
vac-
time.
Yeah,
the middle of kitten season, Wendy. Did you know that?
No.
It is kitten season.
We're right in the middle of it right now.
It's kitten season for me all the time.
Wendy
whatever.
Says it's year long.
Yeah.
Kitten season never stops.
Well, especially in the summer.
So she was on her way to go out of town?
Yeah. Just about, yeah.
Wow, that's not
yeah,
good.
That's Chicago.
Now she can stay longer. I'm just trying to find a positive. Yes. Trying to find some positive.
So
in
she
this.
Just flew in, and yes, boy, are her paws tired.
Right,
and she'll be on with
Did
John
Rodney
Williams
Dangerfield say that
yes.
once?
It didn't get any response
or respect.
Steve's
I know.
Meeting.
So I couldn't believe when Delta Airlines said this.
What said you what?
Know? So I understand. I get it. There are. People taking advantage, we've seen it at the airport. If you fly enough, you've seen it. Taking advantage of the rules about comfort dogs in
right.
particular, but
they just
also
get a
service.
Vest on Amazon and put it on their pet.
$15, there you go.
Right, and you yeah. can tell because the dog is not well trained. If it's a therapy dog or a service dog,
a real service
that
dog,
thing
yeah.
won't even look at you. It'll just stay by its owner.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty well trained. Some of these dogs are just like a floppy-tongued, hey, what's going on?
Exactly.
I got a new vest.
Right. Exactly right. You know, I was talking to someone with the American Veterinary Medical Association who was telling me that there was a cat that was traveling in a carrier, except the owner unzipped the carrier to give the cat an opportunity to breathe. Just happened on the airplane. Well, cats
cat
can breathe,
out.
And the cat got out. And
cat's out of the bag, Bill.
The owner...
It's kitten month right now. It's kitten season right now.
And the owner was sleeping. And the flight attendant had to tap everyone on the shoulder. Are you the owner of that cat? Are you the owner? Before they finally found the owner.
See, that's unacceptable
that
passenger behavior.
That's absolutely.
It really,
yep,
truly
you
is.
You are right.
Right.
But so something needs to be done. But veterinarians and animal behaviorists need to do it, not airlines alone. Here's what can happen. Delta Airlines said, if your dog looks like a pit bull, whatever that means, your dog can no longer be on our airplanes, even if that dog is a legitimate service dog. And that's wrong.
Well, that doesn't seem fair.
No.
Steve, I'm on their side. I'm on the airline side.
Explain.
Here's why. Okay. Because you're putting so many people out by having a dog. I wouldn't want a dog like that next to me.
What does like that mean?
A dog that looks potentially dangerous.
But it's trained. See,
but
that's
any
the difference.
Dog can be,
yeah, but so, I don't know the series of training that any dog has had. All I know is that there's a pit bull looking dog next to me as I'm trying to fly to another city.
What about a Rottweiler? They're scary looking.
Yeah,
what
okay
about a Doberman? What about a miniature pincher?
If it's a legitimate service dog, I'm fine with it.
Right.
But again, you got to say to the passengers nearby, are you okay with this dog being by you for 2 or 3 hours?
Because the dog looks like a pit bull?
Yeah.
So when you do genetic tests on dogs, and a dog
it's
looks like
a lot
like
of money,
a pit bull,
by the way, it's $200. I was going to get it done with Kona, and I'm like, I'm not spending $200.
And
he looks like a lab. He acts like a lab.
He must be a lab.
Yeah, that's the point. But someone could come up to you and say Kona's a pit bull. So if you had, let's say, you legitimately needed, I hope you never do, a service dog, right? And Kona is trained as a service dog. Kona's a mixed breed dog.
Yep.
And I've seen Kona many times on Facebook. And let me say, one good looking dog.
He may have pit bull in him.
Exactly.
He may.
And someone might say, who are these experts at Delta Airlines? So you go in, and then the person at Delta Airlines, who are they to say that dog is a pit bull? Veterinarians can't say by looking. There is no relationship with what a dog looks like. Or a little relationship with what a dog looks like and what a dog really is genetically.
If the dog is trained, it shouldn't matter what breed
it is. Of course
not. Because sometimes, Bill, Chihuahuas are mean little...
Watch
I almost
it.
Swore. I yeah. almost swore.
Go ahead. It's warranted. Go ahead.
But, you know, sometimes these little dogs, granted the bite won't be as big, but
right.
some of these little yappy dogs are meaner than a pit bull, regardless, if as long as it's trained and you can prove it. But no one can prove it. That's the problem.
What the airlines need to do is, in a logical way, beef up these rules. The idea of service and assistance dogs, that's covered by the federal government right now. So,
Steve, how about something akin to a passport that you must have with your dog?
Oh, I like that.
Wouldn't that make sense?
I have no argument against things like that. That's all good.
Where it has to be fully registered.
But the problem is, how do you go around? So there'll be someone tomorrow. So let's say that idea happens today.
Mm-hmm.
By tomorrow, there'll be an internet site. We can give you these passwords, $20. And now you've got a password for $20.
Fake doggy
right.
IDs.
Yeah, so we've got to
then
figure
out
a way.
You throw the same penalty as if somebody had a fake passport. You just make that the same exact penalty for animals.
Listen, I would be
You're
all
You're solving
for,
the city's problems,
that's
the world's problems.
I know, and it's kitten month.
Vote for Bill Leff.
Did Mayor Rahm Emanuel reach out to you via Twitter and tell you to delete your account?
Well, the mayor, I think, is out of town, right? Isn't he going off to China or something like that? So filling in for the mayor.
I'll fill in. That'll be fine. Steve, if you want to know more about the story, you'll be on with John Williams again today at what time?
2:05.
2:05. All right.
Yeah, and Susan Russell, who was the executive director,
she'll
was fired, and she will be on. This will be her first radio or TV appearance because she just did get back
from
her vacation.
You guys are both on with John, and I think Thomas Jefferson also.
Yes.
And where do people reach you?
SteveDale.tv, and you can read about all these things and, as they say in radio, more.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Isn't that what they say?
Yeah, yes. They say that in radio.
I think they say that.
They do, they do. That's Steve Dale, everybody. We'll take a quick break, and then some news, and then more show. Eric Zorn will stop by. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land.
He's
Zorn, Zorn, we sing the praises of Zorn.
Yeah, we do. We can't argue that.
Eric was
Zorn.
Singing his own praises.
I was singing my own song.
You deserve
it. Catchy. It's very catchy.
Yep, you deserve it, Eric. Eric, of course, fine writer for your Chicago Tribune and a guest with us every Monday here on the show. Much to discuss with you. Let's start with what you're referring to as the parade.
I keep misspeaking. It was not a parade. It was a protest.
Right.
This is my fault and my failing. It was a protest on Saturday morning on the Dan Ryan.
10 a.m.
They blocked off the Dan Ryan. And
we all knew it was coming.
We all knew it was coming. And the thing that really interests me about this is that this was a protest against violence in the city, which is supposed to be one of Mayor Emanuel's Achilles heels politically.
Yeah.
And it looked like he was going to be the guy who was going to be the focus of this protest. It was going to end up looking bad for him. So on Friday, I think it was, all of a sudden, going from saying this is, you know, he was raising questions about it and alarms about it. Suddenly, he was all on board with this protest. He was all behind it on Friday, and then on Saturday, the protest begins, and apparently there was some confusion about whether there was a deal so that they could block off two lanes of the Dan Ryan. I think it's four lanes at that point, maybe five. I can't remember exactly they were going to allow at least two lanes of traffic to go by.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to block the Dan Ryan. They were just going to kind of choke it off a little bit.
Yeah.
And this was unacceptable to Father Flager, Father Michael Flager, the priest at St. Sabina, who has been leading these protests. And so during the protest, then they negotiated, and I guess the march stalled until they finally allowed them to block all the lanes of the Dan Ryan, which is the dramatic gesture that Father Flager and the marchers wanted.
And more people could get hurt if only two lanes are blocked. There's going to be cars going right next to you. That's not good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they were going very slowly because it was choked off.
Yeah,
but it's the dramatic gesture. And so in the front of this protest is Father Flager sort of arm in arm with Eddie Johnson, the police superintendent, making it look like, you know, the city is behind this protest, which Mayor Emanuel had said he was behind the protest. Into this fray tweets Governor Rauner, who is complaining then on Twitter about the chaos that's being caused. And there was no chaos on the south side. They were able to divert the traffic. I didn't hear any stories about, you know, a child in an ambulance dies because couldn't get to the hospital. It was no chaos. It was some traffic backups where they had to divert traffic, but there was no chaos. This was a very effective protest on the part of Father Flager. So Rauner jumps in and tweets about this and how he's very disappointed in Mayor Emanuel. And then Mayor Emanuel tweets back. He says, like, you know, he basically says it was a peaceful protest. Delete your account. And delete your account is a
sort of
internet slang, mic drop, like, you know, get out of here.
Yeah.
And so suddenly this event becomes a victory for Mayor Emanuel. And the bad guy is Governor Rauner,
right,
who managed to sort of just step in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Mayor Emanuel now flies off to Asia for his trade mission. And Governor Rauner is left trying to clean up the mess, and he's tweeting about, well, the chaos I was referring to was traffic, the backup, and there just wasn't chaos.
We talked about this for days, so people knew to make other plans. Don't be on the Ryan Saturday morning at 10 a.m.
And there were people. I was talking to the woman who runs our letters to the editor, Liz Grivey, and she was saying that she was getting a lot of letters from people out in the suburbs who were saying that they were breaking the law and so on. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a stretch of road that you probably never drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those of you in the western suburbs and the northern suburbs, you very seldom are on that road. So this isn't really inconveniencing you. This protest was designed to call attention to the problem of urban violence, and it's a problem that still is going to haunt Mayor Emanuel, but this one protest managed to be the hero of it in a way by having his police superintendent walk arm in arm with Father Flager and by playing this political judo on Governor Rauner. It was
hilarious. Would you agree, Eric, that it's yet another case of the message being lost, that the protest itself becomes the story instead of the message?
Well, a little bit, yeah. I mean, I think this is. It was unclear exactly what the protesters were wanting to do, other than to call attention to this problem. I mean, there was not, you know, an ask like we want this law passed, or we want this initiative.
It's just in general.
It was just in general, and clearly,
you need to do something.
The problem has to do with education and jobs. It has to do with the flow of guns from Indiana.
May I ask something?
Sure.
What has changed today because of that protest?
Oh, well, nothing has changed. The protest doesn't work that way. I mean, you don't get a change overnight. But you, I mean, I don't know what the problem. I don't know what their ask is. And this is one of the things that when you do a protest, you have to be asking for something to happen rather than.
And you need a good chant.
Yeah, you should have a good chant.
So anyway, I thought that was a very interesting story over the weekend, how Governor Rauner managed to step in it and make himself the story when he could have just said, you know, the thing to say would be, I share the concerns of these marchers about inner city violence. I think we need more jobs in Illinois. We need better education.
That's the
kind of thing
a governor politically.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Right?
And I don't know who. I mean, I'm assuming he controls his own Twitter account, and I don't know who he's playing to when he's trying to get people excited about chaos in Chicago when they're marching peacefully down the expressway. So anyway,
we were trying to figure out on the show on Friday. Judy Pilak and I were trying to figure out what could be done. There's so many protests, and sometimes it's a cause that I'm 100% for, but the result is not what I'd want it to be. You know, I know that it calls attention, so that's the reason for the protest, but then the end result is rarely the change that they were hoping for.
Well, yeah, I mean, Wendy asked what's different today, and the answer is, you know, very little is different today, and this is true of a lot of protests, but, you know, you have to call attention, you know, things like the Civil Rights Movement, they started with smaller protests,
right,
and then
it's
a larger protest, and gradually you get people to pay attention to the issue, to do the reading on it, and if you're in the right and you can make your case, then you can move voters and move politicians,
but it happens slowly, clearly. The lady who climbed the Statue of Liberty the other day. Was anything really accomplished in climbing the Statue of Liberty?
No.
She got arrested.
No, I don't think so. I mean, that was, you know, it's one of these little,
the news.
These little actions that, I mean, in a way, it's like, it's one of these things where you, when you make a protest, you make a statement, you are meant to sort of motivate people who are in the middle or who are indifferent to the problem to get more involved.
And it is a gradual
process. You're not going to all of a sudden do climb the Statue of Liberty and have a bunch of politicians say, hey,
let's... But do you agree with me, though, that there must be some better way out there, some more effective way? There's got to be.
Talk radio? I don't know. Going on
calling
or listening to shows like this.
But go back to Colin Kaepernick's situation where he's upset about the way African Americans are treated by police, and he comes up with this idea of kneeling during the national anthem. Well, it went back to bite him because then he couldn't get work after that.
It bit him, but I think it did continue to keep the focus on the problem that he was trying to. He wasn't trying to bash the military.
But there was more focus on the act of kneeling during the national anthem than there was about African American people being mistreated by law.
It became anti-veteran.
Did that get twisted?
That did get twisted around. I do think, though, that when you have someone like that making the statement and trying to keep repeating it, this is not about disrespect for the military. Or veterans, or for the country, or the Constitution. It's about police, the way police treat African American men.
Yeah,
that was what he was. That was what he was kneeling about. And this act of his, although it had a lot of distractions, I think it did keep some focus on that problem. And it did keep that. It did motivate people. And again, you know, it's one of these things where you're not going to get change overnight. But if everyone says, well, I'm going to write a sternly worded letter to the editor, I'm going to make a strong Facebook post about this, that people have to just get out and they show people that they feel strongly about this and that other people feel as they might feel. And so on. It's a great question. I'm not a student of the history of protests. It might be interesting to have somebody on at some point who can talk about how these things happen, because they don't happen overnight. You look at even movements that went relatively quickly, like the gay rights movement, which sort of started with the Stonewall riots and so on in New York in the 68 maybe or something.
Yeah.
And they, so all the way to legalization of same-sex marriage about 50 years later, less than 50 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, those things, nothing happened overnight there either. But you have to keep public attention on
sure.
your issue. I mean, so it's an interesting question. So.
That's Eric Zorn. sorry, in just a little bit.
Do you need us to Heimlich you?
No, that's very nice of you to offer one, but I should be okay. A debate over name tags that is very, very peculiar. We'll get to that in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, along with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Stick around, WGN. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. This seems like a strange thing for there to be a debate about, but boy, there is, and it's name tags. Please explain, Eric.
Well, I was listening to this audiobook, Heads in Beds, A Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality. It's a 2012 book by Jacob Tomsky, and he worked in the hotel industry for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And toward the end, he gives us advice to customers. And he says, though people are forced to wear name tags, you should never feel comfortable enough to actually call them by their names. Gluing a name tag to anyone's chest makes him or her subordinate. Using it without permission implies that you are aware of this fact and don't mind rudely pointing it out. To pick the name off a tag and use it, whatever your intention, makes employees acutely feel that they have lost their personal worth, that they themselves are included in the price. Their mothers use that name. What right do you have to use it? Just because you walked into the lobby? My advice is to ask permission. I've never had a job where I had to wear a name tag, but I read that and I thought, my goodness, I have to say that when I go to like a grocery store or to a hotel and someone's got a name tag on, I don't use the name. I don't call people by the name because I have some sort of internal aversion to that. Like I have the sense that of what this man is talking about. I've never seen it put into words before, but I do have that feeling like that it is somehow. It emphasizes the imbalance in the relationship. So I put this question out on Facebook, and people are like, do you have a job where you have to wear a name tag, and do you want people to call you by your name?
Then why wear a name tag if you don't want people calling you by your name?
Well, you don't have a choice in most cases. I think when you work at
management insists you put a name tag on.
But I think people are really reluctant to use that. I have a friend who always does, and I've sort of never really thought about it, but I understand now, I think, why I sort of recoil a little bit, which is that it's because he doesn't know, the employee doesn't know your name.
Sure, of course.
So it has
introduce
a,
yourself.
Well, how do you ever have a sense, like, does it ever creep you out, like, when someone takes a credit from you, his credit card, and then hands it back to you and says, Bill, thanks for staying with us. Does that make you feel weird? I'm fine with that,
and I don't know about you, Wendy. If I see somebody with a name tag, I then use their name all the time, every day.
It's better than, hey, you. I think it's more personable.
Yeah,
it's not subordinate.
But have you,
I don't mean it to be condescending in any way, just the opposite.
I mean, to be friendlier. I know you don't. But the question I have is always, how do people who are in that position feel? I found one poll, which was like totally unscientific. It was on the Straight Dope site. And it was like 2-1. People felt really uncomfortable using a name. I mean, when they just asked people like you and me,
yeah.
who don't have to wear name tags, do you use the name? 2-1 said they don't. They feel uncomfortable using the name. And then when they polled people who had to wear name tags, it was like 4-1. They didn't really like it when people addressed them by their name. But again, it was so small, such a small poll that it was pretty unscientific.
I had to wear a name tag at Brookfield Zoo when I worked there for all those years.
Yeah.
And I didn't think twice when somebody would say, hey, Wendy, how do we do this on the motor safari?
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sure that they're and even from the response on Facebook that I got from people, there's clearly a mix of people who feel fine with it, who actually like it. Management likes it because if Wendy, the employee at Brookfield Zoo, is rude to someone, they can go to management and go,
right.
That Wendy,
they
that
often
wench,
complained.
That wench, yes, I know exactly who she is.
You know, I eat out a lot. My wife and I have dinner out almost every night.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many times we've had a server, and that's after I've used their name a couple of times, that'll say, hey, don't forget, ask for me next time, or I hope we see you guys soon, and if you do come in... My name's Garrett. Ask for me. I'd love to
really?
See you again. Yeah.
Wow.
And in Boston last week, in three different restaurant settings, they would give me either a card or they'd write their name down on something and hand it to me, saying, when you're in next year, ask for me.
You must be a great tipper, huh?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Tipper.
I don't know. I don't think it's the tip, though. I think it's just... the friendliness that's exchanged back and forth during the meal.
Do you say, like, when he says, "My name is Garrett, I'll be your server," do you say, "And my name is Bill, I will be eating the food that you bring"?
No.
My brother does that to this day. He did it when he was in high school. He still does it. I hate going out to restaurants with him.
They've heard that a bunch of, you know, they've heard that
before. Yeah, but they laugh, and it just kind of breaks the ice, and then everybody's happy.
But I'm interested in hearing from people who have to do this, because, I don't. I've never had to wear a name
tag. You've never had a job with a name tag?
Well, we've had, like, we have lanyards. We have security lanyards.
Oh, right.
That's not for the public. That's for the security guards.
Yeah.
When they tackle you, they can say what your name is. But I'm just sort of curious, because if people are offended or feel like I'm not recognizing their humanity by not using their name, like the person who's bagging the groceries.
But Eric, that author painted as being condescending.
Yeah,
saying that's,
he did.
That's your mom gets to call you by your name, not some customer who's
right.
You know, having a short transaction with you. I disagree with that. I think it.
Well, my point is, I don't know that you, as the person using the name, has the right to agree or disagree with how that person feels about.
Oh, sure, that's true.
So my question is, like, how do people feel? So anyway, if people want to go on my Facebook page and let me know how they feel, I'd really like to hear more about that, because I might write about this, because it was such a
you should.
Yeah.
And Glenn wants to call and talk right now about this. Glenn?
Real quick, I'm coming from an old hotel background. A lot of times when I was a supervisor, my staff was rather large. And for me to be able to address my staff, you know, a coworker or maybe somebody who was a little under me, it was easier to remember their name, obviously, because of the fact that they had the name tag on. But, Bill, in regards to your point, people would address me by my name because I had a name tag on. And when I would be at the front desk and I saw their names, if they would say, "Hey, Glenn, how you doing?" You know, like we were best buddies.
Yeah.
I'd turn around and turn around and go, "Yo, Bill, how are you?" Like we're best friends.
Sure.
And, you know, but it was not because of the fact that I was trying to be your best friend. I was making you feel just as uncomfortable as I was by you just addressing me like we're best buddies. And you don't know me, I don't know you, so let's keep it at a professional level, you know, and you would just address me as, "Thank you, sir," or "Nice to meet you, sir," and I would do the same thing. But you calling me by my first name, that's what my friends call me.
Yeah.
Like you said before, that's what my mom calls me.
Oh, see,
I don't know you,
like
you don't know me.
All right, that's Glenn, we appreciate that. Can I call you Glenn now?
No. Don't.
Well, there's a little difference. Someone on the phone, if you have a service person you're calling and they say, "My name is, you know, Glenn, and I'm going to be helping you fix your computer problem," I think it's okay to refer to, if the person has introduced himself, and same thing with a wait staff, if the person has actually spoken their name to you,
then it's okay.
There's oral permission, I think, to use the name. I tend not to, even in that case, unless I just have to get, like, I need the server's attention right away.
Yeah.
I wish everyone wore name tags because...
And everybody all day long.
I know, but there are people that, like, your kids played soccer with years ago that you've known, but then you haven't seen them for four years, and all of a sudden you see them and you're like, "I can't re-ask them their name, and I don't remember it." We should all wear name tags.
Just call everybody Judge or something, like
Judge.
Babe Ruth used to do. "Hey, Judge, how's it going?"
That's the answer.
Champ.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's Eric Zorn, everybody. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what Steve has coming up in just a minute. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.